Welcome to the Lavo Show podcast. Conversations with outstanding human beings whose love has been inspired and transformed by Osho. Take a deep breath and enjoy the show.
Enjoy the show.
Hello and thanks for tuning in. My name is Swaram and I'm the host. Today our guest is Nirvano. Nirvano was a professor of German and English language before taking sannyas in 1976, and he has been translating Osho's discourses in German language for almost 40 years. I'm so happy to have Nirvano on the show, and I hope you enjoy it. Nirvano, welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. And I'm keeping up. I'm still translating Osho.
That's great to hear. So, Nirvano, as a starter, tell us a bit about you and your story before meeting Osho.
Okay, well, that is a very long story, but I try to keep it short. I didn't know I was a seeker, but I was all along, and so I was not sure what to study, and then finally ended up studying English and German, not knowing really why and what for. And then it happened, then the only way out was to become a teacher. And so I became a teacher in higher education and did this for a few years, but I was so bored and I was so disappointed with how little we were really helping kids to become themselves rather than fit into a pattern, that I wanted out. And then I spent 2 years. I had the luck to get a scholarship to Cambridge as an assistant in teaching German in Cambridge, in a Cambridge college. I lived in that college for 2 years, and I could have stayed longer later because it was only for 2 years that the scholarship, but then they wanted to keep me, and I just know this is too sedate here, and I want to, there's more to life than this, and so I left again. And then I went to Africa, and this trip to Africa was a very old dream of mine, and now I had saved enough money to go there. And so I went on a backpack trip all by myself from North Africa through to all the West African countries, speaking mainly French, which I had learned in school, and enjoyed it tremendously, just being by myself and getting to know Africa today. But there was one meeting in particular which told me that I was just basically peeping Tom into a miserable and destroyed, but once very beautiful culture. And so I decided to go back home. And then I turned out to have malaria in London. I went back to London, there where I had malaria. And then I had old friends there in London from before, from my time in Cambridge. And I hadn't seen them for many, many years. And then suddenly I met them on my very last day in London, when I had decided I have to go back to Germany. On the very last day, I met them in the street, and they were sannyasins. And I'd never seen them except the Hare Krishna people in London. There were four of them. But I could not believe, and I thought, my God, what's happened to them? Now they've turned into Hare Krishnas. And they said, no, it's better. It's something totally different. And do come, we can tell you more about this. And so I went in the evening to their place, and I saw Osho's picture on the wall. And in that moment, in that very moment, just seeing their picture, I just said, well, that's it. That's what I've been looking for all my life and couldn't find in Africa. I couldn't find it in London. I couldn't find it anywhere, not in my profession, nowhere. And that's it. And I was so high as a kite. And And it was clear, this is my master. I didn't think in those terms because I hadn't looked for a master even, but I knew this is my master. And then they were telling me all about what's happening in Pune, Diddalidum, and all what's happening in the groups. And I thought, this is all rubbish. This is not what it's about. You haven't understood what this man is about. But I didn't say so because I didn't have a clue. I hadn't read a word of him or heard a word of him. I didn't know what he was saying. I had just seen his face. And from then on, I knew I was a sannyasin. I hadn't taken sannyas yet, but I was in a quandary now, going back home to Germany and starting my new job, which I had in Germany as a school teacher again. I decided, okay, I have to have this job because otherwise I go down the drain. And so I make a contract with myself in the first holidays. I go to Pune and see for myself what it's all about. And that's what I did. And when I came to Pune, on my first darshan, Osho, I was the first to be called up. And Osho
Interrupt you there? Because for people who don't know what is a darshan, maybe... Can you tell us how darshan, it used to be and what darshan means and how people come into Osho?
Okay. There were two ways of meeting Osho, and that was in the morning he gave a lecture, 1.5 hours to 2 hours, alternatively in English or in German, English or in Hindi. 1 month Hindi, 1 month English, all the time. And each lecture was a chapter in an upcoming book. And in the evenings, he met in a small circle sannyasins, where he initiated them or discussed spiritual or personal problems with them. One could ask him questions and he would tell you and help you out of it. And that is called darshan. Darshan actually means seeing. The master sees the disciple, not only outwardly, but through and through. And this is what a darshan is. It's a sort of intimate meeting between disciple and master, and where he helps you get over certain humps in your life. And so this was the first time I met him. I had asked for a darshan, and I sat in front of, was called up, sat down in front of him, and he just said, close your eyes, and if anything happens in the body, let it happen. And then he said, open your eyes again. And in the meantime, he had put a mala around my neck and told me, this is your new name. And Prem means love, and Nirvana means enlightenment. And I was not aware in that moment that he hadn't even asked me whether I wanted to be a sannyasin, but he had seen, and this is what darshan means, he had seen that I had become a sannyasin long ago, namely in London, with those friends when I saw his picture for the first time. He could see that. And so I was very happy afterwards that he hadn't asked me, because my mind would have said, oh, well, I'm here for 3 weeks. At the end, I may think about it. He just bypassed my mind, and I was very, very happy about that. Okay.
Wow, that's really wonderful. And thank you for telling us the story of your first meeting with Osho. And I always love hearing how people arrive to Osho.
Everybody has a different story to tell, I tell you.
Yeah,
it's
exactly.
Magic. Everything was magic.
Okay, so let's talk a bit about what your main job was in Pune, and I understand, as you mentioned before, that you're still doing it. So you have been translating Osho's books from English into German language for now nearly 40 years, I guess. So how did you start? How did this come about in the first place?
I saw that the books that I talked about were produced in the ashram itself. We had typists who typed the lectures. Then it was typeset, and then we had an offset printing office where the pictures were made to go into the books, and also the covers. And I saw that it was time to have Osho books also in German, and they asked whether there have been any German books yet, and they said, no, we don't have a real translator. And I met Prasad, who was then the lover of Vivek, then called Vivek. Later she changed her name to my name. By the way, now she became Nirvano, Ma Nirvana, Ma Prem Nirvano. But then she was Vivek, and she was Osho's housekeeper and Prasad's lover, and he was a German therapist, very popular, very very humorous, very very open and lovable. And I asked him, what can we do about this? And he said, well, I've been translating a book. You can have a look at it, whether it is okay like that. And he gave me his book, and it was so warped, the German he had used, that I told him this. And he said, well, I mean, I just translate like there's trees there. I don't think about it. And so he said, well, why don't you translate the next discourse and show it to me? And so I translated the next discourse and showed it to him, and he was very satisfied and very pleased. And then he suggested to Osho that he'd found somebody who could do German translations. And then he came back to me and said, yes, you are now asked to do translations.
Brilliant. And that's you got the job.
That's how it started. Yes, there were other people also who tried to translate, but it was very much like Prasad's German. They had been living with Osho for some time, and they had almost forgotten their German. It was never readable. I mean, so I.
You are professional, you know, you studied translation and German, so you're doing it in a different quality. And also, I'd like to highlight for people who don't know, perhaps people who are not sannyasin, who are not familiar with Osho as well, that Osho, there are, I think, 700 titles published under the name Osho, but Osho never wrote a book. So, as you mentioned before, yes, there were people typing and transcribing his words, and his discourses also were spontaneous, so he really didn't prepare too much. And then if you read Osho's books, they are the most impressive books you can read, and if you think that he was just talking spontaneously,
I'm still enthusiastic as I was on the first day. when I read what I'm translating, I often have such a good time just admiring the way he goes about it. Okay.
So my question is, like, translating may seem and appear as an easy task, an easy job on the surface, but it's not. Anyone that tried to translate, you know, they know it's not easy.
Particularly with Osho.
Exactly. So, and especially translating the words of an enlightened master and Osho. Yes. And he said many times that what he's trying to convey is in between his words, which it's very difficult to grasp. So what are the challenges that you face in translating the words of Osho in German language?
Well, sometimes he refers to something from the Indian culture, and when because they were also the half the audience was Indian, so he also, in order to present something to them as well, he referred to Indian contexts, and then when I don't understand, I had to in India it was easy because there were Indian translators who translated him into English, who could explain this to me. And here in Germany, we also have Indians in the Cologne Buddha field, for instance. The Buddha field is we call a Buddha field a little commune somewhere, wherever Osho's sannyasins meet as a commune or as a group or on a regular basis, then that is a Buddha field. And yes, and there are always Indians around who can help me with things like that, for instance, or a political context that I don't understand or I haven't heard of. And but there nowadays with Google and Wikipedia and wonderful huge dictionaries, one can find anything to help you out. So basically, it's just grasping. My image is always, when one listens to Osho, let it sink in, let it sink to the bottom, and let it come back up in your own language. How would he say it in German if he knew German? And that's a kind of transformation process, which is undescribable, and it's just, I'm lucky enough to have that knack to be able to do that. But it's very gratifying to find out how, because you have to be very critical of yourself too, because the mind comes in and tells you all sorts of things. But you have to really grasp what he's saying and then put it into your own words.
Well, that's beautiful. But for me, I have to say that I've read Osho's book first time over 20 years ago, and I was immediately impressed. But I keep reading Osho and listening to Osho, and every time I understand something different or something new, and I don't know how it works. It's very difficult to explain, but the same book is different. And so,
yes.
I don't and know, like, how do you go about that?
Yeah, and yet he always says the same thing, not in the same words, not in the same image, not in the same context. And it's always new. He is always absolutely new. And that bowls me over. I can't believe it, but this is what keeps me alive, I must say. I'm 77 now, and I'm still feeling that it's giving me juice, and that's why I still go on. I can't, and there's no end to it, because by now my Indian friends, translator friends, whom I met in when I was in Pune, and later also on the ranch, they have translated many books already of his Hindi books into English, and so there is no end, virtually no end. In my life, I will not be able to translate everything that Osho has said.
I understand. I don't know if you know about that. That there are some early Osho discourses which have not been translated into English, where he was speaking in Hindi. Do you know anything about that?
Well, I said every month, at first at least, in my Pune time, he always spoke one month English and 1 month Hindi. And all those Hindi discourses haven't been translated, or they are now being translated.
Wow, that's amazing. I mean, it keeps producing content. I mean, there is no end. It's incredible. And also, like, personally,
that's what I'm saying. I mean, it's infinite.
Osho is a real ocean.
Exactly. This is what oceanic.
So the next question is, when I first read Osho's book was in Italian. At the time, I didn't know English. And obviously, I was totally blown away.
By whom?
It was a compilation, a very small book. At the time, I was a student and didn't have money. So I saw this guy with a long, long beard. And I discovered many years after that he was actually a German sannyasin who was selling Osho books in Rome. So I got this book, the cheapest. It was a very small edition for 1,000 lira, which is kind of 50p. And but after I've learned English, now I can't read Osho books in Italian anymore. Like, I feel it's just weird. I don't know why. I mean, I've been away from Italy for over 10 years, and 10 years plus, almost 15 actually. I don't know. Do you feel the same with German?
Well, you can say that, because I can never ever reproduce the impression and the effect that his English original has on myself. Then it is unrepeatable. Unreproducible, basically. But what is it? But you can approach it, and you can approach it more and more and more and more. And when I now read my old translations, I'm very quickly grab a pencil and start correcting my because I should have said that, and I should have been this, and I cannot help correcting myself because of the same thing. It's impossible. It is unique. It is so unique you cannot reproduce it, basically.
Wow, I really appreciate your honesty and transparency. You know, you've been translating Osho's book for 40 years. You're a professor of German. And here you're saying it's impossible to translate Osho's books.
Yeah, well, I mean, but it is so, because, I mean, the experience of having sat at his feet was so overwhelming, just so unbelievable. I must admit, when I first saw him at my first lecture after arriving on my first trip to Pune, I had a feeling, this man is no longer alive. He has died long ago. And how come he is so alive? And that was my very first impression. And later he explained, he's given lectures about his enlightenment, and he corroborated this and by saying, yes, this is my old self died in that moment.
Well, that's very interesting, and somehow it works, because when I read Osho's book, Osho's Words in Italian, I was blown away within, you know, the three sentences. That's all it took me to say, this man is extraordinary, I want to know more, I want to get to know where is he, and that was, you know, like...
This is the whole idea of these translations, to create the thirst. To make you thirsty.
Yeah, and I mean, you're doing an incredible job. And in fact, I wanted to ask you as well, how many Osho books there are in Germany? Like, how popular is Osho in Germany nowadays? Because back then in the 70s, I'm aware that Osho was very popular. And in Italy, for example, Osho's books are bestsellers. Osho is like as known as a rock star. So how is in Germany the situation?
It's not like that in Germany, because the Germans were very, very wary of Osho and were very open for the American lies that were spread during the ranch time. They were very, very seducible to refute him and to refuse him and not to be tempted. And this is what I foresaw when I first thought, my God, once we make German books, the Germans will be out of their minds. They will not be able to bear this, because it touches the downfall of a very high culture through fascism, or Nationalsozialismus, which is sort of Hitlerism. That was the utter catastrophe of the German culture, which was very high and very deep. And I said, actually, I wrote to Osho then in the beginning, when I knew that I was going to be translating him, that many German philosophers and poets have come very close to what you're saying, and it will be my job will be to clean this high language that they created from the dirt of what Hitler did, because he used many, many terms, many, many expressions that they invented, these poets and philosophers, and distorted them and made something of the opposite of it. And my job will be to clean that. when I translate you, I will have to clean all that and find ways to circumscribe it in a way that these associations fall dead to the ground. And I've been really working hard on that, because it is sometimes impossible, because certain words Goebbels and Hitler used, wie Jubel, that is a celebration of the highest kind, for their bullshit. And to circumvent that, those associations, was the biggest trial actually in my work, but it did work, and people and more people read Osho, and in fact the distribution of Osho books is no longer done by sannyasins but by what is the biggest American wholesaler in books?
Amazon, probably.
Amazon, yes. The German translations can be had through Amazon.
So it's very, very fascinating what you're saying, because I've always felt that Osho uses English, which is not his mother tongue, and all the Indians say that when Osho speaks in Hindi, it's like pure poetry. But even in English, which is not
his,
it's still like he manages to speak in English in an incredibly beautiful way. Yet he keeps the language simple. I've always been amazed by how Osho can communicate such deep wisdom,
yes,
but in a very simple way. So at the same time, you are saying that also in your job of translating into German, that is a very like sophisticated language, because you know philosophy, all the philosophers you had, and they've been using all this terminology in German language. So you had to take Osho's language, which is using a simple English, and make it in German also in a more simple way, which it's a double challenge.
Yes, that also, I hadn't thought of that, but this is true. His language is unbelievably simple, and this is, I think, how he manages to go so deep and touches us so deeply, because it's not convoluted, it's not complicated, it's not highfalutin and bragging with nullability. It's nothing of the sort. It's pure poetry. Okay.
Wonderful. So now I'm going to bring up something personal. So it's a personal question, and I thought to bring it up because somehow to me this represents the beauty and uniqueness of Osho's people, and I think all in the Sannyas world you hear such stories. So is it true that you were a gay man and then you married an ex-nun? So tell us the story of how a gay guy ended up marrying an ex-nun.
Well, I have to start with my childhood, because when let me tell you my first or second darshan with Osho in my first visit in 1976 in Pune. I told him I've never been with a woman in my life. I didn't tell him I was gay, but that's how I put it. And then he said, then he asked me to stretch out my hands, and he tested my energy by touching them in the middle of my hands, and then and kept this going for about a minute or two, and then he said, "No, your energy is totally normal, but something misfired with your mother's breast." And somehow I knew this. I knew that my mother, she bore me in 1941, just at the moment when the Germans started aggressing Russia, which meant that was the beginning of the end. And the whole of Germany at that time knew that this is the beginning of the end, and she was. My father was in the war, and my mother had already had a first son, 1.5 years older than me, and she was, when I came, she was overwrought with fright and horror of what was going to happen. And sure enough, both her brothers got shot in Russia. And then later got bombed out in our house, and so she was overtaxed by far. She was a simple, very beautiful girl, but she could not bring up the energy and the love that I would have needed as a child. And I was always missing something, and was very jealous of my brother, whom she loved beyond everything. And so I knew that I didn't get what I needed as a child. But then Osho continued to say, but you can do a group here and somebody will take the role of the mother, and then this can be cured. This is not a big thing. And then I didn't listen. And he saw that immediately and said, "Oh, do something else." I didn't listen because of these friends I told you about. When I first heard about him, they told me all these stories about what happens in the group and all the chit-chat. And I didn't listen. When he said groups, I didn't want to know about it. But then he said, But you can do something else. What is your profession? What do you do for? I said, I'm a teacher. Okay. He said, when you go to bed in the evening, you make yourself a hot milk bottle, and then you roll up in your bed, and then you suck the milk through a teeth, and like a little baby, and feel like you are on your mother's breast. And then in the morning when you wake up, you do the same, and you do this for 3 months. And after 3 months, woman will become available to you, and you will become available to woman. I couldn't believe it. But then I could not do it either. I mean, so I did it. Very, very, very strictly for the next 3 months, I did exactly that. And after 3 months, I went to Pune again because the next holidays had come. In Bombay, at the passport control, there was a woman standing in front of me. After, at the baggage check, when I wanted to collect my baggage, I saw, and this woman that I'd seen before was also standing there, waiting for her suitcase. Didn't come. And so we had to fill in the forms for lost luggage, etc. And then we started talking. And she was from Australia, and she was studying Sanskrit at the Sorbonne. Then I said, I have to go now because the one bag is missing, but what I can't help it. I have to take a taxi to the ashram of my master. And she had arranged for a professor to pick her up, and he hadn't turned up. And I said, but I have to go to Pune now. And she said, well, then can I come along? And I said, yeah, sure. And then we sat in the same taxi with her. And so we went to the ashram. We arrived 8:05 when the gates were closing at the ashram. So we had to see where to go, and then finally found a three-bedroom, which meant three bunks standing next to wooden structures. And so I put my suitcase on the middle bed. There were three next to each other. I put my things on the middle bed to create a Chinese wall, because I was sensing that was not something was brewing. And at that moment, I realized that Osho had said, after 3 months, moment will be available to you, and you will be available to you, to woman. And so I didn't know how is this going to end. And it ended how it was meant to end. After 2 days, we finally slept together, after having told each other for 3 days our life and everything we had seen and done and etc. And then I had my first darshan with Osho, and I said, I've now met a woman, but I'm not in love with her. I immediately wanted to check it, because I knew Osho really felt like you had to make love a new love. And I knew that this was not the case with me. And so he said, but I want you to move with this woman and tell me and report to me all the time what's happening. So he basically sort of made it clear. So, I mean, all this is fact. This is one thing after the other. It was similar, the same magic as the way I got to Osho was repeating itself in meeting Ethel. This is the woman you just saw. We are still together.
Wow, that's very beautiful. It's wonderful, and it really gives us a sense of the magic, as you say, of being
absolutely
around Osho. And
but and I must tell you, these were the only two times in my life that this intense magical aura appeared and arranged everything for me. I have no idea how, but everything was felt so arranged afterwards that I just didn't. I could only think of the guardian angel thing, that this primitive belief, this superstition of angels guiding you. It was exactly like that. But of course, I don't believe in angels. But it was indescribable how exact this followed a plan and how it was masterminded. Yes, that's all I can say.
Okay, wonderful. Thank you so much. So, Nirvana, we are heading towards the end of the show.
Yes.
And before I ask you three last questions, I just wanted to know if you have any projects at the moment, if you're working on anything, if you're translating any book currently. So what are your current projects?
Well, I'm doing the monthly discourse of the Osho Times. You saw in my email address that my name is nirvano@oshotimes.de. That's why, because I'm not part of the Osho Times anymore, but I'm doing all the translations of Osho's texts for the German Osho Times. And there is the Osho Verlag, which I founded years ago, is now in the hands of a woman, and she has renamed it Innenwelt, which is Inner World Verlag Publications. And she does one or two Osho books a year, and those I always translate also. This is what my present job is.
Beautiful, beautiful. And by the way, Anandi from Osho Times Germany just 2 days ago contacted us via email at Love Osho, asking us to do an interview for the Osho Times Germany about this podcast. So that's something that will...
Fantastic. I did not know. Fantastic.
It will come up. Okay, so I've got three final questions.
This is the same management.
Beautiful. So I've got three final questions for you, Nirvano, before we finish. So the first question is, what's your morning routine? How does your morning look like in the first 2 hours of your day?
Well, I wake up and my wife, who is 2 years older than me, does her morning exercise in bed. I make the tea. And then I watch her do her morning exercise while I look out of the window. And I look into a green wall of trees and bushes and enjoy just looking into and watch the birds and listen to the birds and while she does her exercises. I don't feel like doing exercises. And then I make the breakfast, and then we have breakfast. Yeah, that's the routine.
That's like incredible. I think I've interviewed, 10 people so far, and maybe 8 out of 10 in the morning, they like to look out of the window, look at the tree, all the sannyasins live in nature, and listen to the birds. I don't know what it is. I think because during Osho times in Pune One, you guys were in Pune, and there are lots of recordings of Osho discourses where you can hear the birds. So maybe
something that stays inside
that you need that, and it's incredible.
And you may have noticed there was always the piping of a train going by.
Yes,
you could hear that.
Yes, I can hear that, yes. And it's also beautiful because when I went to Pune first time, and then I was sitting in Buddha Hall and I could hear the train. It really reminded me on the discourses of Osho. It's imprinted in the unconscious. Beautiful. Okay, so the second question is, what's your favorite meditation and why?
Well, honestly, I'm not doing any meditations.
Okay, so what was your favorite meditation during your time in India?
I think it was Kundalini.
Okay, why Kundalini?
Because it was so melodious.
The music, you like the music?
The whole sequence, yes, the harmony of it.
Okay, fair enough. But, it's a wonderful meditation, yes.
Absolutely. I mean, Osho said, what you do as meditations has nothing to do with meditations. This is only to get you an experience and a taste of what meditation can be. And once you've got that taste, you don't have to do the exercises anymore. I mean, this is what just comes to mind now. But this is why I never actually do those meditations anymore. But I am loving moments of rest and peace and looking and just listening to the birds, yes.
That's
this
amazing.
Is why it's so wonderful living here.
Yes, that's beautiful. Well, thank you. That's really nice to hear. So the last question is, you live the Osho experiment. You were one of the pioneers in this movement of creating a new man, Zorba the Buddha, as Osho said many times. So what does it mean to you personally to be with Osho today in 2018?
Everything. He's my life. Yeah.
Okay, well, that's clear. You have been answering very long answers. You've been giving very long answers throughout the whole interview, and now here you are so synthetic.
Just one
synthetic.
Statement.
Just one. Oh, Nirvana, look, it's been a real pleasure talking to you. I really feel your sweet energy. And even though I never met you in person, and this is actually the first time...
One doesn't have to meet in order to feel.
Exactly. I never actually spoken to you before this interview, but I feel so close in just less than an hour. I feel like I want to hug you, and I want to listen to the birds next to you. It's so, so beautiful.
Thank you very much. Okay.
So thank you for your time. That's the end of the show. And I send you a loving hug.
Yes.
Thank you, Nirvana. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to the Love Osho podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, you can show your appreciation by leaving a review on iTunes. Visit loveosho.com for new episodes, blogs, and much more.